At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Soccer matters.
Fix that score! The US with Dempsey!
Turn it up! Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro de Maturino, gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Uribe!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 as we roll on here. Great opportunity here to remind you of Danish Inspiration's Modern Contemporary Furniture on Fondren. You want the best in modern contemporary furniture? It's Danish Inspiration's. Get over there. The great Dane himself, Jan Christensen, who we saw Jan. He was over in Denmark taking in an FC Copenhagen match. But if you want modern contemporary furniture, my house is filled with it. And it's Danish Inspirations, modern contemporary furniture, danishinspirations.com. Gives us a great opportunity to talk about the University of Houston women's Cougar soccer team. He is the head coach. He grew up playing the game here in Houston. Went on to be an under-20 U.S. youth national team assistant coach. Took over the under-18 national team coach, assistant at University of Virginia. We could go on. He's Jaime Frias. Jaime, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Glenn. Really appreciate you.
All right. Well, we appreciate you. I always love the local story, and it goes back a long way for you. You've come full circle. You're back here. So let's talk about the U of H women's program. You just took it over recently. Big piece here going into this season is you guys are now in the Big 12. Take me into that and that great competition against teams like Texas, Texas Tech, TCU. Take me into that, what it means for the program.
It means everything for us, Glenn. I think this is the reason why I in particular accepted the job, is the challenge of going into one of the major conferences in women's soccer here in the country. We've been preparing for this moment for a long time, not only as a women's soccer program, but as a university, as an athletics department, as coaches, administrators, and players. So there's a lot that goes into trying to compete at a really high level. But like I said, it's a lot of work, and I think we're ready, and hopefully we're surprising some people here in year one.
How do you feel you are positioned here? Because you just recently took the job over last season. So how do you feel right now in building the program in the image of Jaime Frias?
Right. As a coach, you always have a plan in place, and you try to forecast how many years it's going to take you to get that plan in place. And I feel we're a little bit ahead of schedule, in particular with the quality of players that we're bringing in and how fast our current players are developing as well. And so as I look at our preseason this year in comparison to last year, the returners are playing a much better brand of soccer. They're a little bit more cerebral. They understand a little bit of the team tactical principles that we're trying to implement. And then the players that we've brought in, not only incoming first years, but transfers as well, what we're trying to do here really resonates with them. So in particular, the transfers, they got a little bit more experience. And so they can really hit the ground running here quickly. And that's what we need them to do in order to turn our program around.
Jaime Frias, head coach, U of H women's soccer. And they will kick off, actually tonight at the taping of this interview, you're probably playing a preseason game, but their opener is at the University of Washington. So really good strength of schedule. Take us into, you know, some of those principles of how you want to play if you were describing your team.
Right. It's, in looking at the modern game, you have to have players, in my opinion, that can read the game well. And so what we're trying to do with our team tactical principles is just trying to organize the team as best we can. We want to be the fastest moving team of and off the ball, not only in our conference, but our aspiration is to do that around the country. We want to have, you know, a variety of attacking options and attack in a variety of ways. We want to be unpredictable in the attack. We want to have interchangeable parts in the attack. So, for example, our left back can become our left forward. Left forward can become a center mid can become a wide back, all these types of wonderful interchanges. But we want to attack as one, and it's harder to attack as one all the way through the attacking third if you're playing an extremely direct brand of football. And so you've got to use passes to glue you together. And from a defensive perspective, we want to be a pressing team. But like I tell my players, we don't want to mad dog it all over the field. We want to be organized based on cues and triggers. We want to be, we demand a lot out of the smaller details. For example, in the individual defending, we want to be really good in individual defending instances. We want to make sure that we're a team that communicates defensively, a team of competitor and ball winners, and we want to defend as one as well. So those are some of the concepts that we try to instill within our team.
Jaime Frias, he is the head coach of the University of Houston women's soccer team. I urge you to get out there. You're recruiting now. How much of your roster is based on the talent that exists here that we know here in Houston? How much in Dallas? And then, you know, how much do you venture out?
When I got here, it was a smaller percentage than what I would like of players from Texas. Texas is so rich in talent. It's been, in particular, the Houston, Austin, and Dallas area. So we want to do a much better job of trying to keep that talent here, put a fence around Texas to make sure that we keep most talented players here in Texas, but in particular in Houston. And so, but what's unique about our city, it has two major airports, Glenn. So a player from California can get here in 2 hours. A player from Maryland can get here on a plane in 2.5 hours. A player from Ohio can get here in 1.5 hours. And so we're a hub as well for recruiting nationally. And I think we've got to take advantage of that as well.
Jaime Frias joining us, University of Houston head coach. Their opener will be on the road at the University of Washington. I look at your schedule. The Big 12 really ups the competition. You know, where do you set the bar right now realistically? I mean, obviously, we know you want to have a great season, right, get into the tournament, do well. But where do you realistically at this phase look at it?
We want to do first things here within the program. We want to obviously try to make it into the Big 12 tournament. And so 10 out of the 14 teams make the Big 12 tournament. That's really just in and of itself, it's really competitive to try to get into that tournament. And then from there is, can we sneak into the NCAA tournament, which is something our program's never done. If we can do those two things, I think we've punched above our weight. And I think that that's something that we're really trying to grab onto as a program.
I may talk about a couple of your key players. I know, you know, a lot of times coaches in college want to shy away from that because, you know, it's just, but, you know, we do need to be aware of who to come look for if we come to your game. So pick out a couple players for us with respect to all the others.
Yeah, I think if you like creative, cerebral players, you're going to look at our midfield. In our midfield, you're going to look at Caitlin Matthews, CeCe Cross, and probably Alexis Folks. And Alexis Folks is someone that played here. She's out of the Woodlands area and played for the Dash when the Dash was still here, a DA team. And so you have some homegrown talent there here playing for us. She's a transfer that transferred in from Texas Tech and is back home here playing at the University of Houston. As a back, we have this transfer. We have a couple of center backs that are transfers, which is Jada Gibson and Sophia Weber. And one, Weber is from the University of Connecticut, transferred in. Gibson transferred in from Georgia. But the one that's really coming up and it's going to surprise a lot of people is this player called Alex Whitcraft from Dallas. And if you like attacking outside backs, you're going to like watching Alex Whitcraft. And then up top, we have a wonderful collection of front runners. We have a transferred in. Davis is her last name. She's transferring in from Ole Miss. And then you have Cameron Maddox that transferred in from the University of San Diego. Those are extremely dynamic, creative, goal-scoring kind of personalities. So I think if I could encapsulate some players to look out for in each line, those will be the ones that you probably look out for.
He's Jaime Frias. He's the head coach of the University of Houston women's soccer team. Now, look, I've been covering the Big 12 since back in the 90s, believe it or not. And I have just seen the exponential growth of the quality of play. It's unbelievable. I mean, it went from a time where I remember coaches saying to me when I was in youth development, hey, we just need some women to put on our team. They don't even have to be very good, to now where it's just the quality of play is exceptional. Do you look forward to locking horns with some of these great coaches that I know, the Tom Stones at Tech and the Angela Kelly? I mean, this has got to make it fun.
Yeah, it really does. I think what I like most about this particular conference and group of coaches is that you can be super competitive with them on the field, but yet off the field, you can put your arm around each other and be collegial like it's supposed to be, right? You're going to try to beat somebody when you're there at the game, but afterwards, and you can discuss what's going on in their personal lives, discuss what they're doing within their coaching, and they're super open to discuss those types of things. And so I'm more than anything, I'm looking forward again to know each of them a little bit better as I'm a newcomer within this conference.
And obviously the athletic department at the University of Houston, very engaged in women's sports. And I get the sense that you feel a great support from them.
Yes. Like I said, on my interview, I didn't want to know what the University of Houston was going to do for football, for softball, for baseball, for track and field. They really sold me on the vision of what it was that they wanted the University of Houston women's soccer team to be. And they're investing in a ton of resources, not only off the field, but human resources, you know, the people that are needed and required to make this thing go. And that's what's most exciting about joining the league and joining this department.
Quick mention about your staff, Jaime, before we let you go.
Flor Benatar is a longtime coach, comes out of the Dallas area, and she could be a head coach anywhere in the country. But what's exciting about her is that she wants to start a project just like I did and be a part of starting something, starting something from the ground up. She's a motivator. She's an educator. She's involved with U.S. soccer as well on the youth side. And she's a wonderful colleague to have with me. And then there's Jalen Cunningham, which is one of the up-and-coming goalkeeping coaches. One of the top goalkeeping coaches from around the country, in my opinion, and I've seen a lot of them. And she was recommended by one of my good friends, Janet Rayfield, played at the University of Illinois for Janet. And she fits the bill in everything that's required for being a fantastic coach.
Jaime, thank you so much. We wish you the best of luck in a great season. We look forward to visiting with you throughout the season. And great story, and we wish you the best of luck. Thanks so much for coming on tonight.
Thank you so much, Glenn. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
All right. That's a great hit there with the University of Houston head coach, Jaime Frias. I would say get down there and support your local teams. And U of H and Jaime have big aspirations, so check that out. This is Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm, daspitlaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. They're bilingual. We'll take a break. We have more to come here on a packed show.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. All systems go.
Houston is all systems go.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Hey, a quick word here for Lamont Brands. LamontBrands.com, that's where you get the Soccer Matters t-shirts and hats. All the proceeds go to support the 501c charity, the Snowdrop Foundation, for pediatric cancer awareness and scholarships. So 501c charity, Snowdrop Foundation, great, great, great charity. And we thank LamontBrands.com for producing the t-shirts and the hats. So grab yours and get behind a very, very good cause. A great opportunity here to catch up with, a man that covers very intensively the CONCACAF region, which is, as we know, changing, emerging, moving in different directions by the tournament. He's John Arnold. And he's got the Getting CONCACAF newsletter as well as writing features right now in the League's Cup. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, always good to be here, Glenn. How are you?
All right. You're one of this new breed of young journalists, I think, that are really capturing a lot of readership and are really passionately going after this in your journalistic career. But your passion for the sports clearly comes through. The reason why you got focused on the CONCACAF region, I think it's interesting to find out from you.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of it was just coming up as a soccer fan and watching games and sort of realizing that, you know, while a lot of our colleagues are doing their research and their homework, sometimes you would watch a game like a U.S. qualifier and they'd be playing a team like Costa Rica and just the MLS players would get spotlighted. And sometimes that was appropriate and those were the star players, but there were plenty of other times where there were really, really good players who just seemed to be flying under the radar. So as I kind of increased my journalism and started to report and realize, hey man, sometimes I can just pick up the phone and call these guys, I decided to pursue that. So, you know, learned Spanish and started to write more about the CONCACAF region. And I was working with a website full time. And then a couple years ago decided, you know, I'm just going to start telling every story I want to tell in the newsletter. So, it's a bit of a thumbnail sketch of how it all got going.
You know, it's interesting because it's easy to do the messy story, right? That one's out there. Everybody's going to want to read it potentially. But it's also fun, right, for you to kind of mine these stories that nobody really knows about and then bring this thing to light through words.
Yeah, it's special to be able to do a story. You know, one of the ones I did on the newsletter before the Gold Cup preliminary round was talking with a guy named Gerwin Lake. He was the leading scorer for the entire CONCACAF Nations League. Remember, it's not just the U.S. and Mexico. This goes all the way down to the CONCACAF's smallest members. He plays for Sint Maarten, the Dutch side of the island that maybe people know from vacationing or seeing some beautiful photos of or crazy pictures of the airport where there's people sunbathing and the plane's coming right down. So he was the leading scorer. I called him up. He works in Rotterdam. He's from the Netherlands. He was eligible through a family member to play for Sint Maarten. And so, you know, he works logistics during the day. He plays soccer at night. He wrote to the Sint Maarten national team saying, hey, I think I could help you guys out. They held a tryout in the Netherlands. They said within one session, he was already signed up. And now he's scoring goals. You know, everyone's telling the messy story, and I like to try and put my own spin on it. It's always a joy to tell the most important story. World Cup, Women's World Cup, big-time national team, big-time club. But I get a special joy from telling those stories that no one has heard of, that no one knows. And not that you do it for this, but those are the types of stories as well where, you know, you get a message from Gerwin Lake after saying, man, hey, I didn't realize people were going to take notice and understand who I was better just from the simple interview and newsletter. So those are the moments that kind of keep propelling me forward and keeping me interested in that kind of thing.
Yeah, and as someone who has family in the Caribbean for many, many, many years, those stories abound. I mean, they're amazing. So, I mean, most people don't even know Tim Duncan was a swimmer before he became a basketball player from St. Croix. So, you know, before going on to fame in the NBA. We're talking to @Arnold, John on Twitter. He's got the Getting CONCACAF newsletter, which I receive. I love that. He's doing features on the League Cup right now. All right, you were up in Frisco, right, for the Messi game? Give me some impressions and thoughts, because from the perspective of watching it on TV, Lionel Messi lifted everybody, from every single player on that field to the crowd.
No, absolutely. I think Messi's impact is just so monumental. And, you know, I get to games quite early. I'm sure you do too, Glenn, to, you know, kind of get in my spot and prepare. And, you know, usually it's a pretty lonely time when I get to Frisco several hours early, but already fans were lined up hoping to see Messi get off the bus, trying to, you know, get a Messi jersey from the people selling them on the street corner, which certainly isn't something that happens at every game in Frisco. So from that moment on, you knew it was going to be a different night. And it was. I think you talk about him kind of raising the game. You know, fans were certainly engaged from minute one. And I think it was interesting. You know, some of the people wearing Argentina 10 jerseys or wearing Messi's jersey from PSG or Barcelona, you could tell were more FC Dallas fans than Inter Miami fans. And so they were cheering when FC Dallas was scoring goals, when they went up 3-1 at one point in the game. The people are still clapping and cheering, but then Messi did what Messi does. Miami goes to penalties. And, you know, I think raising the game of the other players as well. You saw Alan Velasco, FC Dallas's Argentine, who has Maradona tattooed on his back, such as his respect and love for the Argentine heroes who have gone before him. So Messi's obviously quite an important figure for him as well. He had his best game of the season. He's actually had a bit of a sophomore slump this year for FC Dallas, and yet really was a player that I think, you know, probably gets an 8 out of 10 rating for the game if you kind of do the L'Equipe style or whatever it is. I don't know. But you know, he raises his game. Defenders are raising their game. Everyone is. But, you know, no matter how much you raise your game, Lionel Messi still is Lionel Messi. He can still hit that free kick from that spot. He can still beat the goalkeeper no matter what he does. And, you know, I was kind of skeptical that Miami would be able to make this deep of a run in this League's Cup tournament, not because of a lack of talent by any stretch by Lionel Messi. We saw him win the World Cup just a few months ago, by Sergio Busquets or by Jordi Alba, just because I wondered how quickly it would gel. I think they still have some problems with that, but it seems like Messi can paper over a lot of those cracks.
No question about it. And you know, I kind of put myself in the mind of, number one, the players on Inter Miami. All of a sudden, the biggest known soccer player in the world who just lifted the World Cup is in your team. So now you're training with him every day. You're around him. Same thing goes for opponents who, you know, you have to think in your head, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for me. I want to shine in that one moment. It may never come again for me. And to your point about Velasco, it's one of the best games I've ever seen him play. And not only with the ball, but without the ball. When Inter Miami was in possession, he was trying to make it difficult for Busquets, et cetera, et cetera. So great point. You wrote a great article on the League's Cup website. And I would suggest people go to leaguescup.com and read this, especially Houstonians. It was titled Monterrey North, Rayados Tigres fans at home in Houston's passionate League Cup knockout atmosphere. You and I were talking before the interview. It's always great from somebody, when somebody outside a market does a great take. You did a great take on this, in my opinion. I really applaud you, because we have known for years that fans of Tigres and Rayados drive across the border, invest time, money, to go and support their team. We know the link with Houston, Texas, with Tigres and Rayados. They may be the biggest. I think they're the biggest brand, potentially, these two teams in this region of the world. With all due respect to Club America and Chivas, I think they're in there. But this was a great article. Why did you decide to do this article?
Well, for the League's Cup site, we're trying to do articles like that that go a little bit beyond simply what was a great game. But, you know, if you watch the game or if you watch the highlights, you already know it was a great game. Not to say there's not a value in writing those types of stories. I do them all the time and try and put a special spin on them. But we're trying to look for these stories about connection, about sort of how the U.S. and Mexican soccer culture is colliding, what beautiful moments that creates, what moments of friction that creates. And I think that when I saw this game, Monterrey Tigres was going to be in Houston, I thought, man, I got to be there, because I've been to previous games, Tigres America a couple years ago, some friendly matches, sometimes that have involved the Dynamo. With my work, I've just been in Houston before and seen not only kind of how passionate about Tigres and Rayados Houston really is, just how many people from Monterrey live in Houston, and how quote unquote regio, as sometimes the city city's residents are nicknamed, just how regio Houston is. So the atmosphere delivered. You know, I wasn't sure 100% what I would find, but what I found was something that I thought was quite beautiful. You know, it was a neutral site game. It had been 10 years since the Clásico Regio had been played outside of Nuevo León, the state where Tigres and Rayados both play. And so you had fans from Monterrey chanting and singing. You had fans from Tigres chanting and singing. You had just a really cool vibe. And I think it's notable that despite the fact that we've all known this for a long time, even 10 years ago when they were putting the games in Robertson Stadium saying, hey, this is where the people from Monterrey are. Now we finally see the clubs, Tigres and Rayados, investing and trying to make those fans who exist and will never stop supporting their team feel more like they're part of the community, feel more plugged into the club. And I think, you know, you have to ask questions about, you know, the Houston Dynamo and other teams in the state and other teams in MLS, where it's, you know, I was saying, hey, some of these Messi fans, they're also rooting for FC Dallas. How do you get those fans who are Rayados Tigres and they want to watch every game every Saturday to also become fans of the local team in their city? I think it's a big challenge. But if you recognize that that community is there, and I think if you value that and say, this is beautiful, it's really cool what you've built here. It's cool that Tigres is trying to host more events. It's cool that Rayados are launching social media accounts in English. It's cool that both of these teams are making an effort. How can we become that other team? You know, Tigres, I spoke to the vice president for marketing, a very impressive guy, very smart strategy. And he said, we're trying to become everyone's top three favorite Mexican teams. They don't mind if you root for the Houston Texans or the Houston Dynamo. They're saying, we want to be your favorite Mexican team. And they understand Chivas and America are already very powerful, but we think we can win more fans. That's their strategy. That's their idea. And I think it's a really wise way of looking at a very complex market and fandom that's evolving and changing as we all sort of start to consume sports in a different way.
John Arnold, he's at Arnold, comma, you got to spell it out, C-O-M-M-A, John, J-O-N, at Twitter. All right, and he's writing for the League's Cup. He's also got the Getting CONCACAF newsletter. I suggest you get it. We heard, Tuca Ferretti came out very strongly with a lot of comments about how the gap is narrowed. Liga MX is no longer you know, the dominant league in the world. I think we all saw that kind of coming with additional investment. From the Mexican perspective, and I talk with a lot of people in Mexico about this, player development down there, how is the gap narrowed from a competitive standpoint in your mind, John?
Yeah, when we talk about the leagues, I think that the biggest thing setting apart MLS in Mexico is this player development idea. And I would say the U.S. sort of accepting that these players are going to develop better elsewhere and trying to get players to Europe as quickly as possible. Clubs being open.
By the way, I have to stop you there. Remember when that was so valiantly fought against, when Jurgen Klinsmann was pushing a portion of the American players to try to go to Europe, and look where we are now. The basis of our national team is the likes of Adams, McKinney, Pulisic, that all really started their careers over there, apart from you know, developing and maybe academies with MLS
team. And I would love to see the day when MLS in Mexico have the best coaching, have the best atmosphere, have the best nutrition, weightlifting programs, et cetera. But right now, Europe is still ahead of us, right? And so I think MLS has come to that acceptance and figured out a way, crucially, to make it work economically. Clubs understand that if I sell it a 17 or 18-year-old kid for very low money, but I keep a big portion of that sell-on, when this kid succeeds, as we hope and think he will, I will then benefit. That delayed sort of, maybe gratification, that delayed cash, I think, is vital, because Mexican clubs are still starting to sort of have the wheels turn there, but mostly want to keep their players at home. And so when you see players take the jump across the Atlantic Ocean, if they do it, it's often quite late. I think that's sort of the biggest, you know, issue between national team player development. Well, so why are we not seeing Liga MX teams win in all these League Cup games? First of all, they're playing every game on the road. That's crucial and critical. We know from MLS results, it's very difficult to go on the road, especially when you've been on the road for as long as these Mexican teams have been on the road, which is almost a month now for most of them. But I think the other thing is that you are starting to see MLS close that spending gap a little bit and start to have some of these younger players in the middle tier, if we want to call it that, roster slots, have a better soccer education, have stronger soccer IQ, and just be better players technically on the ball with their understanding of positioning. I would say that those players are starting to catch up. I would caution, you know, when we look at the CONCACAF Champions Cup, as it's now called, when we look at future editions of Leagues Cup, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Mexican clubs kind of roar back. But in this edition, as we're talking, Glenn, there's two left, Monterrey, who beat Tigres, and Querétaro. You don't necessarily look, that means guaranteed there's at least one MLS team that's going to secure one of these three CONCACAF Champions slots that are available in League's Cup. So that's already, I think, a bit of a success for Major League Soccer. If an MLS team lifts this trophy, I think that would be a big success. And if it's 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 3 that get these CONCACAF slots, there's no doubt about it. MLS has sort of very convincingly, quote unquote, won this tournament. I think it would be fascinating to watch be great to be a fly on the wall in the next meeting between Don Garber and Mikel Arriola, the two leaders of the leagues, because I think at some point, and it could be this year, Mexican teams are going to say, hey, hold on a second. We got to host some games because it's not fair. But if these teams are competing on a level playing field, I think we would see very even results. And that speaks really well, not just to what MLS is doing, but I think to the development of the club game in the region.
John, there is a thing called cash payola greenbacks. That's the great neutralizer in all of this. But listen, it's been a great tournament. We've got LAFC Monterrey as one of the quarterfinals, Minnesota, Nashville, the Philadelphia Union, Querétaro, and then Inter Miami and Charlotte. And we're crying crocodile tears down here in Houston because the Dynamo had a shot at playing against Messi and Inter Miami. Yeah, in Fort Lauderdale. John, as always, thank you so much for coming on. Wonderful stuff. We look forward to another visit in the future.
My pleasure, Glenn. Talk soon.
All right. On Twitter, at Arnold, John, J-O-N. Getting CONCACAF newsletter. I suggest you read it. He's another one of these great rising young writers. These guys are putting the real work in. I mean, these are really intensive articles. And if you go over to leaguescup.com, you can go over there and you'll get a real good feature on Monterrey and Rayados and what it means to Houston. And as somebody who's been here since 84, I can tell you he's right on with this article. All right, we're going to take a break here. Reminder, best soccer watching pub in Houston, it's called Hugh O'Connor's. Go out I-10. It's in the Marquee Entertainment Center. Huge whiskey offering, huge beer offerings. You go out there, see David and Goose. They got the Dark Woods in there if you want to kind of close your eyes and pretend you're in an English pub or a Scottish pub. Well, this is the place to go. It is, again, Hugh O'Connor's Pub. It's out on I-10. It's in the Marquee Entertainment Center. They do an incredible steak night on Thursday. They got all the traditional British bangers and mash and all these types of great British pub food to go along with great beers and whiskey offerings. All right, Hugh O'Connor's Pub. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We finish up tonight. We go up to Central Texas, and we talk about Austin FC. What is going on in Austin?
ESPN97.5.com. If you want in, you have to audition.
Hi, I'm Carrie Dubek, and I'm reading for the role of Man at Party Who Smells Fart.
Is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, final segment of the night tonight here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. As always, a big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they've been getting soccer talk on the radio for years. You have to give the Daspit Law Firm your attention if you need a personal injury attorney. They are the best. They will work for you 24/7 nights and weekends. Again, bilingual at 713-CALL-NOW. Let's go to Central Texas. Let's find out what's going on with Austin FC. And there is a lot going on. He is with the Austin Chronicle. He does a report called the Verde Report covering Austin FC. Does a fantastic job. He's Eric Goodman, at Goodman on Twitter. He joins us now. Eric, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Absolutely, Glenn. Appreciate it.
We're finishing it off in big style here tonight. A couple of thoughts from you on the overall perception in your mind of the League's Cup.
Well, I mean, aside from what looked like an incredible crowd that Houston got for Tigres against Rayados, then, I mean, it really has been the Lionel Messi show. And I think that's by design. I mean, I don't think you could have given the arrival of this player a better platform than this tournament that, just attracts a bit more attention than if it was MLS regular season. I mean, people are invested in the drama. I mean, the game against Dallas was one of the most dramatic and one of the most entertaining matches that that I've watched in any league, in any competition, in what felt like years. And, you know, and that's what he brings. And that's what the greatest players of all time are able to bring, is that drama and that sense of occasion. So, and, you know, as long as he's still involved in it, I think it's going to go down as a really memorable competition.
He's Eric Goodman, at Goodman on Twitter. All right. Rodolfo Borrell comes in, new sporting director, Manchester City, Barcelona, comes in brutally honest right away, calls out Austin FC's last season as one that was overachieving, even used the word luck. How does that sit with the Austin FC fans? And from my perspective, I think this real heavy dose of reality has been a good thing for the franchise and the club.
Yeah, I'm personally in two ways about it, but the fan base seems, by and large, and I even did, you know, a little informal Twitter poll because I was curious about this myself. It seems like, you know, roughly 70%, you know, are on board with this idea that, hey, you know, we were not as close as we thought we were. And you know, Austin's got some smart soccer fans, and they could see this season, you know, how you know, big the gulf was between where they thought they were going to be and where they've actually been in terms of their performances. And injuries have played a part in that. Inconsistency in the back line has been a part of that. But it sounds like there is this kind of willingness to accept the fact that Austin is a lot farther away than a lot of people in this town, you know, kind of were willing to admit at the beginning of the season. And yes, you have this, you know, brand new, you know, essentially a neutral figure, at least, you know, relative to the club's history, this neutral figure that can come in a short time has, you know, scanned the playing field and determined that this club is not headed in the direction that will allow it to compete for MLS Cup. And that's something that I think is a risky, you know, viewpoint and stance to take, because, you know, this club does have some serious talent, and obviously Sebastian Driussi is kind of the head of that snake, and he's 27 years old. And if you put this, you know, if you downshift into a full 2 to 3 year rebuild, you do risk losing the prime years of his career and potentially giving him a lot of reason to seek, you know, a transfer elsewhere.
He's at Goodman on Twitter. So what's interesting about that is you wonder if, even though I know he studied it, and this is a very smart man, Rodolfo Borrell, you wonder if he really realizes how Major League Soccer works. Because if you look at the situation, you're still fifth in the West. You could still make a run in this league. You're never out of it in Major League Soccer. So, you know, to go full bore, it's rebuild time, is pretty interesting. That said, it does seem like Claudio Reyna and, you know, those Josh Wolf in making decisions did miss on a lot of players. Rodney Redis, I think you put this in your article. It was a very good point. Johan Romagna, Gite, Emilio Rigoni as a DP. You're not getting enough out of him. Fagundes has gone to L.A. Maxi Arruti, you knew was going to be a short-term solution. Ethan Finley is having a great year. I mean, this guy, you can't ask for more from him, yet he's at the back nine. Jazzy Zardes, same thing. He's got six. So, you know, really the future to me looks like the Gallaghers, the Pereiras, Driussi, to your point, if he's going to stick around, Owen Wolf, Brad Stuver, Lima, these are the guys that look like fundamentally will lock down a lot of the glue on this team in the future.
Yeah, I mean, this is a franchise that, despite kind of the success they've had, has made a lot of mistakes. And you can even throw in signing Diego Fagundes to, you know, restructuring his contract, more than doubling his salary. I can't get over this, that Josh Wolf was so, you know, willing to say that it was something they did out of goodwill. And I just, that term to me does not even like jive with sports. You don't do things out of goodwill. You give a guy, you know, a raise if you think that adds value to your team. And what it ended up doing is actually making Diego Fagundes a burden in terms of his salary, more than what the club thought he was providing. And so in a way, you've got, like you mentioned, you've got a lot of players on this roster that if Austin FC could just snap their fingers and offload, and you talk about the Rigonis, the Redes, Romagna, you know, if they could, they would. But they can't. Those contracts are just sitting there until, you know, by and large, they expire. Diego Fagundes was the exception of a player who was on a big contract, but was still effective enough that was, he was drawing interest from other teams and specifically the LA Galaxy. And so, you know, that's why you kind of have the sacrificial lamb of a player that was so beloved in this market and this fan base. And he's the first one that has to go because he was the only one that they could possibly move. And so this is, you know, it's kind of like the first domino. There's no turning back now. You know, you got rid of one of the players that was working here in Austin in Fagundes. And so now you have to go all in and you have to just wait till all of these players who have not been effective, unless something unless obviously any of them could turn a corner and surprise us. But you really, you know, this is kind of the first step of a long-term rebuild that this club and this fan base is going to have to deal with.
Contracts are earned. I agree with you. It was weird. Obviously, there was something going on there between coach and player. Now, Fagundes didn't necessarily come in the fittest guy this year, right? I would liken this to the situation in Houston with Sebastian Ferreira, who, you know, had 13 goals last year for the Houston Dynamo on a team where he got absolutely no service. Apparently did not come in the fittest. That's what they say. Yet, on the other hand, you know, he never seemed to be a tactical fit here for Ben Olsen. So some of this may ride on Fagundes, but you know, you're losing big pieces, and you have to say there is some accountability on the end of the player, right? Is that what Josh Wolf, you think, was upset about? Was just the lack of fitness coming in and, you know, and wanting this new contract?
Yeah, there's no question about it. And you know, Josh Wolf is the kind of coach that, you know, he places a ton of value on, you know, the physical data that clubs now all take from their players in training sessions and games. You know, they wear those, you know, bib bras with the trackers. Mm-hmm. And we know that Austin FC, and particularly Josh Wolf, I mean, he's referencing that data all the time and he's making a lot of his decisions on that. And sure, that's important. But this is also, you know, this is a player who's a new father. You know, this is a player who had not only was a new father, but also his wife had recently gotten pregnant again. And they actually just, and within the last 2 weeks, had their second child, which is kind of, you know, in just a personal, you know, side note for what they're going through, it makes it difficult to kind of change markets. Not that that's something Austin needs to take in mind. But it's just to say that, you know, maybe there was a bit of a oversight of just the kind of the personal and the life aspect of what players sometimes go through in the off season, because it's not like Diego Fagundes became a bad player in one off season. Did he come in at his peak fitness? No, but you saw it, you know, just recently, I think it was San Jose or Vancouver. I can't remember, but one, a game that Austin won 4-1 and he and Driussi were just lighting it up and looking tremendous. So mm-hmm. He's still a talented player. And I think LA Galaxy is getting a really good player that maybe not at a tremendous salary for what you're getting, but you know, Diego Fagundes, it wasn't in the sense that he just became a bad player.
No, no question about it. And actually, when you saw him start to get fit and turn the corner, like you said, you're going, okay, this is great timing. You got the second half of the season. MLS is forgiving. You know, look, all of this said, and this is the structure of MLS being accented here. All of this said, Austin FC is still fifth in the West. Okay. You're still above teams like the San Jose Earthquakes, Vancouver, Dallas, Houston. You're still fifth in the West. You can still do this thing called make a run in Major League Soccer. And this is the forgiving nature of the structure of this league. You can take time to get problems solved. And we've talked about this a lot, you and I.
Yeah, and it's a good point that you made that it, you know, maybe that's something that Rodolfo Borrell, whether, you know, obviously he knows this reality and he'll be the first to tell, you know, he loves to say how much he's followed MLS even while he was still with Man City and still in Europe. But it's the kind of thing where, you know, in the Premier League, if you're sitting fifth, 9 points out of first with a team that you're not super excited about in terms of your own roster, you know, that's not going to motivate you to really press and deliver a lot of confidence. But in a league like this, where you have a playoff and a lot of times the best, you know, how it's so rare that we see a supporters shield winner, even though LAFC, you know, finally cracked the code last season. It's so rare that you have a supporter shield winner, you know, actually win MLS Cup, because you have these teams that get hot. And, you know, Austin, they still can do that. They still can make the playoffs and make a run without Diego Fagundes, but it's going to be a lot harder because now you're placing a lot of responsibility on Emiliano Rigoni, who hasn't shown that he can really, you know, that he can play up to that level. And you're probably going to need a lot more from guys like Danny Pereira, Owen Wolf, and Ethan Finley, who, like you said, is been playing great, but how much can you bank on that, you know, continuing?
Two shining stars this year. Are they John Gallagher and Danny Pereira?
Definitely those two. And of course, you know, Brad Stuver is kind of the one, you know, shining star of player that the Austin fan is kind of now, you know, has all their eggs in terms of having a fan player relationship. But yeah, when it comes to play on the field, it's been Gallagher and Pereira. And, you know, you're talking about a defensive midfielder and a fullback. And I think that says a lot about any club when both of the players that you're highlighting as kind of the keys to the season are playing back in defensive roles. It makes it really hard to compete and compete for trophies. But Sebastian Driussi's healthy, and you know, that's what happened last season. That's kind of why Austin overachieved, is because he was able to carry them, you know, with what seemed like a goal a game, sometimes two. And so, you know, he still has that ability. And if he gets really hot and if he can carry this team, then they could still compete for, you know, to get as far, if not farther, than they did last season.
Stranger things have happened in Major League Soccer. There is no question. Rodolfo Borrell, let me go back to him, the new sporting director. Do you get any sense, and of course this is a possibility whether he's given you any clues or not, but do you get any sense there could be a system or structural change in the way the team plays?
I mean, that would have to come from Josh, because all Rodolfo Borrell, despite his resume at, you know, on the technical side of things, I mean, he wasn't in a front office role with Man City. He was Pep Guardiola's direct assistant coach. So, you know, his most recent experience is in, you know, technical design and planning. And so, you know, it's a good question, but from everything he's said so far, this is Josh Wolf's team. The first team is Josh Wolf's to decide, you know, in terms of rotations, in terms of minutes, and in terms of how they're going to play. And I think, you know, it'll be a case where, as much as Josh Wolf wants to lean on Borrell's experience for advice and for, you know, insight, Borrell, he said one of the reasons he chose Austin in terms of a destination was because he had a prior relationship with Josh Wolf. He's excited about Josh Wolf as a coach. And so, you know, he's going to defer to Josh when it comes to those things, which I find interesting. As long as if Austin struggles, that will become a very interesting dynamic.
Interesting it is. There's no question about it. For Austin FC fans, you're still in fifth in the West. You still have a shot at making a run in the playoffs. We've seen stranger things happen in Major League Soccer, but it certainly has been an up and down affair. It's been a very, very rough entry into cup competitions for this club. We'll see what happens in the future, but to your point, Eric, a great article in the Austin Chronicle. It's the Verde Report. He's Eric Goodman, and it does outline the fact that there's a lot of interesting things to focus in on with Austin FC. Eric, thank you very much for coming on, as always. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Glenn. Appreciate the time.
All right, Eric Goodman, at Goodman on Twitter, Austin Chronicle, Verde Report. That does it tonight for us here. Big thank you to Andrew Carlson, our producer, Guillermo Lazo Romero, our video expert. Plus, we want to thank you for listening in. By the way, Spotify, Apple, Google, subscribe. Hit us up on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram at Glenn Davis Sock, at Soccer Matters GD. LamontBrands.com for the Soccer Matters t-shirts and hats, all to benefit the 501c charity Snowdrop Foundation to fight pediatric cancer. Till next Thursday night, I'm Glenn Davis. Remember, soccer matters.
You found ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I can feel it.
I can feel it down in my plums.